As a business owner, it's important to keep your business connected. Spectrum Business is committed to keeping your business online whenever and wherever you need us, all backed by the Spectrum Commitment. Get fast, reliable internet starting at $40 per month when bundled, or level up your internet speed and get a 3-year price guarantee. Learn how Spectrum Business can help your business stay connected at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
This podcast is brought to you by Men's Tea Clinic. One visit can change your life. Men's Tea Clinic offers a variety of men's wellness programs to help you meet your goals and keep you as strong as you've ever been. Call 972-GO-MEN'S-TEA today or visit mensteaclinic.com. That's mensteaclinic.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Aldama driving. Missed the shot. Oh, John Moran just broke the rim with that finish.
What happened to the Ja Morant extremely questionable injury report, as he came out on fire? Didn't need much from him after that, as the Memphis Grizzlies end the season for the Dallas Mavericks. Good morning, Metroplex. It's Sean and RJ. RJ Choppy out this week on vacay in Italy. And we got Cowboys insider Bobby Bell. We got Peyton and Aiden in the back. We are live on the FanCam, Twitch, and YouTube reacting to the Tim McMahon Dallas Mavericks story that just came out from ESPN. And Bobby, how would you summarize it so far?
Bad. Very bad overall. I mean, this whole thing continues to make a big portion of this article is about the training staff.
Yeah.
And their disagreements with each other. And how some of that tension has bled over and caused issues with the team as a whole. But
Billsborough and Belton. I thought this was going to be all about Casey Smith, but these two other names are in here for probably the majority of the article.
Yeah, I would say the Casey Smith portion is the catalyst, kind of the domino that got pushed over that changed everything, is what this feels like. But the Casey Smith issue, like we read last hour, where he was essentially fired over Zoom by Nico Harrison while his mom was dying, that's a brutal look. That's the most damning thing that's in here. But after that, yeah, this issue of Billsborough and Belton, who were brought in to kind of replace Casey Smith, replace some of the training staff, and their tension with each other, and then specifically Billsborough's tension with Luka Doncic's body team, is what really caused a lot of these issues.
A friend of Luka's grumbled, "You don't perform like he does if you're a fat, drunk pig," referring to the way that they have painted Luka's conditioning. Why did Dirk leave? Well, it sounds like he was not happy with the dismissals of Casey Smith and then Scott Tomlin, who was working with the Mavs as well. He leaves and becomes a part of Dirk's foundation. So Dirk is the one, it sounded like, who was like, okay, I'm stepping away from this because of the moves that you're making towards people I love and respect.
Yeah, and it 100%, the Mavs did not tell him you don't have a place here anymore. It doesn't sound like, and by the way, there's very little in here about Mark Cuban's departure. It's kind of, I mean, it's referenced and said that Nico Harrison won out and successfully cut him out of basketball ops.
And Mark Cuban tried to serve as the middleman between Nico and Luka when Nico was not happy about Luka's conditioning.
Yeah, like he wanted to essentially be the mediator with Nico, Luka, and then Billsborough, and make sure that everybody got on the same. And he was his services were declined because he had already been cut out. And this just doesn't.
And Nico wanted a bunch of yes men. He wanted yes men energy. You know, one of the things I was just guessing about Nico Harrison is that he appears so stoic and so confident in himself. It's very easy to identify, in my opinion, insecurity in people. The way they act, the way they have to talk, how loud they have to be. And I would not have guessed that Nico Harrison was very insecure and needed yes men around him. Some of the people I respect the most are fine. It's like Barkley and MJ. Charles says he's got his crew that always will be honest with him. Michael's crew is a bunch of ass kissers, like Ahmad Rashad. I think Quinn Buckner, who is one of the voices of the Pacers. And Charles wanted to not be a yes man for Michael. And when he was on television and said, Michael's just not doing a good enough job running the Charlotte team. And he doesn't have anyone to tell him no. And Michael stopped talking to Charles forever because of that. I would have thought that, you know, Nico could operate in a think tank and have, you know, yes and no people. But he was insecure. He wanted to get rid of people who were really good at their jobs, people who were really tight with Luka. And my proxy Dirk, not as big of a factor because he's not, you know, sitting here playing at the time. And he wanted to cut those people out and get them out of there. I understand if you feel like Casey Smith is a Dirk person and not necessarily a Maverick person. That's the way it's coming across, the way that Nico felt. But there are people in this who are saying he wanted cheerleaders and he wanted yes men and people to go ahead and just blindly do his thing and follow his blueprint.
Yeah, which, like I said, I don't know how he became who he was and got to the level he was if that's the way he did business. Like everybody talks about that you couldn't find a person to say a bad thing about him when he got hired here. Everybody's like, oh my gosh, you just went and signed a superstar to be a GM, a guy that NBA teams have been dying to get in their front office for forever. You finally got him. And the fact that he's now, I guess, just revealed himself to be a dictator in the front office and somebody who refuses to hear any sort of...
And how about Cuban bringing in Nico and then Nico helping to push Cuban out? Like a little backstab. Mark Cuban brought in Nico Harrison.
It's like when the Nosebleeds brought me in and started interviewing me, and then I went and talked to Zach's sister. That's similar how it is. But I will say this is... And there's another article that dropped around the same time as McMahon's from Brad Townsend over at the Dallas Morning News, which is not the same sort of expose, but it's just talking about expectations the rest of the way. And he does say that from all indications, Patrick Dumont does not plan to publicly address Nico Harrison's job. Said also people should absolutely take it as a signal that the fact that he made Nico go out there and talk means Nico's back, that he's going to be here, and that it's something that Patrick Dumont's committed to, is because, hey, you got to start giving some answers related to this. But one of the other interesting things they talk about is Brad Townsend had mentioned one of the issues they had early on, an issue of Nico wanting something despite others in the organization saying stop it, was Christian Wood. That apparently he was told prominently by Casey Smith, no, don't do it.
Don't bring in Christian.
And then he brought Christian Wood in, and apparently Casey Smith had an awareness that he's really bad locker room and on-court fit. Don't bring him in. And had told Nico Harrison this. Nico Harrison did it anyway, and then it obviously didn't work out. But that's an instance pretty prominently where I would, if what we know about Nico Harrison or what we think we know about Nico Harrison is accurate of just, I want yes men, then I would absolutely also think he would go, you're the trainer. I don't need to hear from you about how you think somebody fits into the locker room. Or like, I don't need your feedback on this. And it sounds like he just had made up in his mind, you're not going to be here with me. You're not going to be partnered with me here in Dallas.
Luka Doncic coming out and just dunking on the Mavs front office and Nico again. The PR battle continues to be 100-0 or 77-0. Mavs, by the way, eliminated 77 days after the Luka trade. They had a 70% chance of making the playoffs if they did not trade him, according to ESPN analytics. And the title of the documentary has to be 77 Days, the destruction of the Dallas Mavericks with Doncic in Dallas. Here's Luka with Malika Andrews talking about all this criticism from the front office that has happened.
It's just sad the way he's talking right now. I never say anything bad about him, and I just want to move on. The fans, my ex-teammates, I always keep it hard. It's time for me to move on from there.
Have you spoken to Nico Harrison since you left Dallas?
No.
Have you spoken to him on the night that you were traded?
No.
Was your intention to finish your career in Dallas?
Of course. It's an easy question.
I wish she would have asked if he's talked to Kid. And I wish she would have asked, do you think Jason agreed with Nico about the deal? I still don't have that answer. I'm dying to get that answer on what Jason Kidd really wanted to do.
Yeah, because, I mean, that seems to be the biggest unknown in all this still. Is, I think Tim McMahon came on here, and McMahon's obviously got a good beat on what's going on with the team. Even if he's making an assumption, I think it's usually based in an understanding of how things are operating. And he had made it sound, at least when he talked to us a couple different times since the Luka trade, that he doesn't buy that Kidd didn't know anything. He was completely in the dark.
Yeah.
And that it may have just been more he didn't totally get in the way. That it I don't know that it was he is an active participant, but it's probably similar to just you were a witness to it, though. You didn't stop it.
Yeah.
You didn't try to stop it, and you could have.
More from Tim's piece. It did not help matters that Luka was hit in his left calf while scrimmaging with teammates at SMU before training camp opened. It was initially believed to be just a bruise, but after Luka experienced significant soreness in the opening practice of camp, an MRI revealed a grade 1 strain, which the Mavs did not mention in their injury release. Luka sat out the preseason, added more than a dozen pounds during his absence, frustrating and angering Harrison and others in the organization. Luka, using his own team of doctors instead of the Mavs physicians, was diagnosed with a sprained right wrist on November 20th. Nico and the Mavs medical staff considered the diagnosis a cover-up to allow Luka time to work on his conditioning and shed weight after a sluggish start to the season. So they didn't want to embarrass him, so they made up that wrist injury that we knew about. On November 29th, a day before the fifth and final game he sat out, a TV in the media room at the Mavs practice facility was tuned into the closed circuit feed of Luka scrimmaging with low minutes players and staffers, launching long jumpers on almost every possession. When a team employee noticed the feed, they changed the channel quickly, saying they were unsure how it became available. The feed has not been shown in the media room since. Okay.
It's a mess. This is a total mess. This entire organization is a mess. They've got the other issue in here. It's something we all assume, something we talked about, that Anthony Davis and his return when he came back. They give that as another example of just how there are issues with this training staff and communication.
Because, well, let me finish this up real quick because I'm reading as I go still. The tension between the sides soared after Luka sustained another left calf strain, his fourth in a 28-month span on Christmas Day. Lucas can't believe he had returned too quickly from a left heel bruise he had sustained during his 45-point triple-double against the Warriors and had been playing on his toes to avoid discomfort in his heel. Nico blamed poor conditioning. They also drastically disagreed on the timetable for Luka's return after getting the MRI. Billsboro believe Luka could be back in 2 or 3 weeks, while Luka's team adamantly stated he needed to sit out 6 weeks. They got their way, and a target return date was set for February 8th at home against the Rockets. That, quote, deepened the divide, according to a source. Another major disagreement emerged between the two sides when Luka refused Nico's request to join the team on a 5-game road trip.
It's the issue here is just it feels so much like Nico having opinions about how things should operate medically.
This is very Tom Brady-esque with Belichick in, look, you already, and I would side with Nico here, you're already thinking the guy does not train and work as hard as you want. Now, you put that to the side, right, when he's averaging 38-8, but then you know that Casey Smith is a Luka person. You know that Luka already has his own medical team. You don't believe that his own medical team is really treating him without bias, right? They're going to side with him, and you got to cede to it. And Bill Belichick did not want to cede to Tom Brady's guy, Alex Guerrero, in the facility. He banned Alex Guerrero. So it's really tough when your star has his own people who you think are placating him, and you're fighting over the treatment that the team wants versus the player and his people.
Yeah, and I guess that's a function of that you're talking about there, of just being him thinking that he's not doing enough or that the advice is wrong, because he was with Kobe all the time. He clearly idolizes Kobe. Kobe had his own body team. Kobe had his own people that he worked with outside the Lakers. And, I mean, look, you look here, it's like whenever we talk about, while you were out, Choppy and I had talked about this one day, the idea of, okay, if Dirk was playing now, would Nico have a problem with Holger, like, being here as the jump shot doctor? Like, I mean, that's something that NBA
is Holger
players
are applying what Nico also believes in for his vision.
I mean, that clearly seems to be all that matters to Nico, is that, are you in complete agreement with me? Do not challenge me. It's just, it's so authoritarian, and I
Nico
don't
got
know how-
frustrated because they couldn't truly fix the conditioning question that had lingered.
Yeah, that's the biggest thing. Now, the other aspect of that, it says that with Harrison under fire, Anthony Davis was motivated to make a strong first impression to the outraged Mavs fan base in the first home game after the shocking blockbuster deal. He acknowledged that he should have waited another game or two to return, but Davis said it was his decision made in consultation with his personal medical team and Billsboro. So Anthony Davis also has his own body team, it looks like.
Yes, and he wanted to do a solid for Nico.
Yeah.
To try to make him look good.
Which clearly, again, if there are guys like Anthony Davis, who Anthony Davis doesn't seem like a bad guy. He seems like a pretty good guy, actually. Yes. And he's a hard worker. Clearly, he sees a different side of Nico. So there's some disconnect here with Nico's relationships with people that we still have not figured out yet.
877-881-1053. The way to hit us up on the Franklin and Franco injury attorney text line. Where is your panic meter when it comes to the Dallas Stars with game two tonight? That's next and below the belt on the home of the Cowboys and Rangers, 105.3 The Fan.
This season, a new hot deal has arrived at Metro. $25 a line for 4 lines with all the data you need and 4 free Samsung Galaxy A15 5G phones. Getting Metro's best deals is easy. No ID required, no activation fees. Get a new number or keep your own. It's up to you. That's 4 lines for $25 a line plus 4 free phones. Visit a store or go online today. Only at Metro by T-Mobile.
When you join Metro Plus tax, for a limited time and subject to change. Max one offer per account.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
We get the best start to the day because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
Into the Star Zone, dropping it back off. Jump by Lehkonen, saved by Ottinger. They score! The Avalanche strike first.
Uh-oh. Regular season ending 0-5-2, including 4 losses at home. Spill over to game 1 at the AAC as the Stars lose 5-1 to Colorado. They lose game 1 in their 8th consecutive series since 2022. 8 straight game 1s, 0-7 in series openers under Pete DeBoer, 6 of them coming at home. You got your injury questions with Robo and Miro. And now all of a sudden, Bobby, the pressure is on for tonight. Game 2 at the AAC at 8:30. Why are we getting 8:30 Dallas start times? 8:30?
Hasn't that been the case the last couple years in the first round? Like where they were playing Minnesota at like 9 o'clock at night, even though they were here?
And it's not even 8:30. It's 8:50 because the games before them run long. Then, they delay it. It's 8:50, 9 o'clock, basically. The disrespect of the central time zone is ridiculous.
Man, it's going to be a long week with the Rangers in Oakland. Rangers, A's.
Sacramento.
Sacramento, sorry, California. 9 o'clock. 9 o'clock start times for baseball and hockey. So it's going to be a long week right there.
Gosh, yeah. See, I'm looking at last year against Vegas, game 1 in Dallas, they started at 9:30. Like, it's...
I was there. It was brutal.
Well,
yeah. Did you show up the next day? I can't remember.
Yeah, I did.
Okay, good. I just couldn't remember. No, but I mean, it is... There's a lot of pressure on them, clearly, but this is also, like you just referenced, they've done this pretty consistently under Pete DeBoer, and they've managed to bounce back and get to the Western Conference Finals the last couple of years, so that's it's not an unfamiliar position for them.
Pepe, are you worried? Were you worried watching the other night afterwards?
I mean, I guess technically Friday I picked the Avs to win the end of the series. So I'm not worried because I know history shows
What segment did we do those series predictions? 10:02 when you didn't say it on the air?
Yeah.
No, I did because you asked me and I went, Avs. Like, I'd pick the Avs to win this series. I'll go back and find it.
Okay.
Yeah. We said it before 9 o'clock, I believe. We're not worried because I know history shows that the Stars, take advantage of losing game 1 somehow. They find momentum. They win game 2. So I think they're fine. I mean, it'll be a DEFCON 5 if they lose tonight, for sure.
DEFCON 5 is the lowest. Oh, it actually goes DEFCON 1. Up. So, okay. Like, 1 is the worst.
I should pick 3 just to be safe.
All right. So Stars, Avs, game 2 this evening. And they'll look to go ahead and even up this series as they've been able to do in a lot of years past. All right, how did you wake up this morning, and did you invite yourself to the party
this weekend.
Yeah, let's talk about waking up, because I think this is really important for us. We might be screwed. All of us here on the morning show might be screwed. So researchers in Japan took a look at three different types of waking from sleep to see what was more effective and healthy. Like, how alert were you? We just heard Peyton stumble on a read coming back.
Yeah.
It may not be his fault. It may be the fault of his sleep cycle. So these researchers found that 20 minutes of natural light streaming into your room before you woke up helps alertness once you're awake. So it reduced sleepiness by a considerable amount. So basically, you're laying in bed, 20 minutes worth of natural light comes in and naturally kind of wakes you up. Or your alarm goes off and wakes you up. You're generally more alert. Brain power is functioning at its optimum level.
We don't have the natural light option.
Nope, because we are in the dark. 30 to 60 minutes of light from dawn before waking showed smaller improvements, but still some positive outcomes. The one that didn't help a damn bit is our everyday reality here on the show. The room being completely dark all the way up to the time you wake up. So the study found that there wasn't any difference in physical fatigue from the three light setting. So it's not like you were physically more tired. But what they found is that brain fatigue was way up for the people who awoke like without any sort of light streaming into the bedroom beforehand. And they said that even when getting the same amount of sleep as the other subjects, so even if it was you got 8 hours, you got 8 hours, you got 8 hours, you were all operating on the same amount of sleep the night before, that if you didn't get that light streaming into the room beforehand, that you were considerably more groggy.
Dragging.
So since we wake up like this every day, our brains are forever going to be fatigued more than everyone else around us. So it's only going to get worse with the permanent daylight savings time, I would imagine.
Where we're sitting here. Is it permanent, the permanent?
It's going to go there at some point, I'm sure. So 8:15 in the morning when we're sitting here and it's still dark outside. I just want to remember that. I want everybody to know that this is hurting our brain function. And basically what I'm getting at is it's even more of a miracle that I destroyed Zach and Eric and that we're the best show on the station given our clear mental disadvantages that we have. We're basically a show full of Jim Abbott's if he pitched like Jacob DeGrom. That's kind of us.
Oh, Jim Abbott woke up without sunlight.
No, I just we all have our limitations. That's
okay.
All. Sean is really regretting. That was in my prep.
I'm glad I have the, 4:50, leave the house. Probably. So I got 30 minutes at home that I'm usually awake, and then basically a 30-minute drive. So I'm getting the cobwebs out versus before I had a house and just rotated apartments here in Uptown. I'm coming in last second, and I have less clear the cobweb time.
How do you generally, and Peyton, you too, how do you clear the cobwebs in the morning? Do you do loud music? Do you just instantly get coffee? Like, what do you
no,
do?
No, nothing. I'm just up.
Just you have time to wake up?
Yeah, just have time to wake up. I don't do anything in particular.
Do you ever find yourself, so this will happen to me sometimes where when I first wake up, if I'm ready to go, there are times where I'll sit there for another 2 or 3 minutes because I'm like, I don't think I should get in a car and drive yet. Like, I still think I need a second to wake up before I get in and start operating a vehicle.
Oh, there are plenty of times where my eyes have been, I'm going across the bridge in Rockwall and my eyes are basically shut because I allow myself 10 minutes from the time my alarm goes off to where I can get in my car. Because I don't counter for any traffic or anything. It's like I have this time to get ready. Because it's like I want as much sleep as possible. So I don't need 30 minutes
to
get ready.
So you only have 10 minutes from when you wake up to getting in your car?
I've timed it.
No way.
Because I don't like stall around. Like I have my clothes laid out. I go to the restroom. I brush my teeth. I get dressed. I don't turn any lights on, basically. I have the automatic lights on in my bathroom. So I just walk down. I have all my stuff outside my my room, like my backpack, shoes. I get my shoes on.
You lay out the clothes. How many people do that? How many people, men, lay out their clothes?
It's just because, waking up early. If I was working normal 9 to 5, I'm sure I would go through the closet routine, all that stuff. But
so I typically...
You don't get coffee in the house and drink in the car?
No, I have it here. Because coffee, that takes longer to, I'm on a time schedule here. I got free coffee up here. So why would I, waste coffee?
Because you got a 45-minute drive in which you could be drinking it to become more awake when you walk in.
Yeah, but then it's like drinking, I don't know.
Oh, your eyes are closed on the Rockwall Bridge, but you don't want to drink coffee for safety.
I'm about, if you don't include the time where I'm like waking up and just kind of like smacking myself in the face, like time to get up, wake up, dude. I think I'm about 10 to 12 minutes because I'll get up, I'll go get my clothes, I'll brush my teeth, I'm usually gathering, like putting my laptop in my, I should, if I do that the night before, I'm out of there quicker. But usually I've left it out because I don't want to put it up the night before. And so then I'm like taking it apart, unplugging it, doing all that. But yeah, about 10 to 12 minutes.
I should try the wear my clothes to sleep. Then I'll be in my car. I'll be 6 minutes.
It'll just be like RJ, wear the same thing every day.
You know the you know those videos on TikTok, Peyton, of like get ready with me?
Oh, yeah.
You should do a get ready with me for the Facebook. We'll put it on the Facebook.
It'll be the shortest get ready with me ever.
Just show us then. Show us your morning routine and show us you driving in. I want to see how awake you are and how dangerous you are to the drivers of Rockwall.
Don't do it while you're driving.
Self-invite. Yes, which is always, I feel like, just I can't do it.
He'd be good at that.
He would. He does it regularly.
Yes.
He self-invites.
What do you got there?
He self-volunteers people to do work for him. Like, he's absolutely not afraid to do that. Well, so
how many people? Bobby does this. We'll meet someone brand new somewhere, like Red. Red or Tolo Justin at the dinner at training camp, and Bobby quietly tracks and times how long it takes for RJ to ask these people for something.
And it sometimes it's 10 minutes, sometimes it's 2 hours. He will, before we leave that first meeting, ask them for something.
Yes.
Or just not even ask them for something, just clearly like imply his need that meets what they do and wait for them to volunteer.
Justin was like a build a wall of shocker for Choppy, a construction project. And Red was like, hey, can you take back all this alcohol and edibles from training camp?
Hey, can you give me the back door? Yeah, he was like,
oh, yeah, I forgot about the entry.
He was all over it. And so instantly. Well, a recent study published in Personality and Social Psychology Bulletin now says that you should not be afraid of the self-invite. No matter how much you think you're going to be ostracized for it, new research suggests that you should invite yourself to other people's functions more often. They say the hesitancy people feel to do that is usually unfounded, and they're often more welcome than they believe they are if they would just ask. But I totally get the person who doesn't want to ask.
Yeah, so I got a lesson, a Hispanic lesson on this. Over the past week, where you know, I'm married into the Contreras family, and they're all just telling me, don't be surprised at these events. First off, there's going to be 60, 70 people, and everyone is just unofficially invited. Like, oh, I'm like, who's that person at this function? Who's that individual walking into my house? I'm like, oh, they met like the bar. They've been hanging out for like a month or two. Like, there's some drinking buddies. And then there's this random and that random. And they're like, it's a Hispanic thing. Everyone is going to get the invite all the time. See, these quinceañeras, I mean, 75 people deep minimum.
Yeah.
Are you going to have to do that for the girls?
They haven't angled for it yet. Kristen didn't do it when she was growing up, so I don't know that we're going to do that. But I mean,
a lucky break for you.
I could see them. I could see the girls just going like, "Oh, well, I can have this sort of a party." Then I'm going to ask Laura, especially. I think would force her way for that. But see, to me, I've always looked at it as if you wanted me to come, you would think to ask me.
Oh yeah.
Like, and if you didn't think to ask me, then I'm like a weird afterthought. It's just, it's kind of weird to volunteer myself.
Oh, yeah.
But
me and you are identical with that.
But see, on the flip side of that, I do have instances of somebody going like, well, I would have liked to have, or say something after the fact. I'm like, I just totally, but if you would have asked, like, I would have been.
No one's going to ask.
But I know, but I'm saying from the perspective of the person putting it on and somebody saying they wish they got, I have felt bad before. I'm like, if you would have asked, I would have like really liked for you to come. I just didn't even think about it.
Now, I will guilt you with a passive aggressive comment afterwards.
Yeah.
Like, oh, what was that? Like, oh, invite got lost.
Yeah.
Invite must have gotten lost. I will passively aggressive, you know, like inviting me to your wedding and saying no date, but then other people could bring a date.
That I'm going to defend that. I'm going to defend that. That is not the way it works.
Say his name.
No, I love him.
That is not the way that worked. But no,
I want him to text me.
I would say, like, for instance, we run into this, I feel like, a lot with Chop. Where it's like, Chop will come to my city to like do something. I'm like, dude, I'm right here. Yeah. I could go down the street and have a drink with you or whatever. And he's like, ah, oh, you know, we were hit and run. Plus, you know, your work friends aren't your friends.
Which is really weird because like socially, he's usually up for anything.
Well, I guess he's maxed out at that moment. Like he's got all of his social like quota taken up by these other people and he can't fit in anymore.
All right, so there it is. Do you invite yourself and the wake up routine? to get you out of the cobwebs on this Monday morning. Hopefully you had a fantastic Easter. This is DFW Sports Station 105.3 The Fan. The NFL Draft officially takes place Thursday on this station. NFL scouts have made their predictions for the first round. Who is left for the Cowboys to pick in Below the Belt after this? The great Bobby Belt.
Bobby Belt is an idiot.
Don't make me take off my belt.
Don't make me take off my belt.
We're not.
Over to you, Bobby.
We know what's going to happen ahead of the Cowboys in the draft. Or we don't know it all. And people are just guessing. And they're just professional guessers.
I'm trying to think of the last prospect who everyone honed in and locked in on as much as Tet McMillan right now at 12.
For the Cowboys specifically?
Yeah. Like where everyone's like, that's who we want. That's the pick. It feels like all of DFW wants Tet McMillan. Kyle Yeoman.
That's a good question. I'm trying to think who in the past have they all... Because, I mean, obviously, typically the Cowboys are not picking high enough. And when they are picking high enough, they don't rally. Like, for instance, there was a split on if you wanted Jalen Ramsey or Ezekiel Elliott.
Yeah. I think more favored Zeke.
Sure. Yeah, I agree. But it was a case of, like, it wasn't unanimous. It feels pretty unanimous that people want Tet.
Tyler Guyton, no. Mazi Smith, no. Tyler Smith, no. Micah Parsons, no. As Ross Tucker will remind, you know, many of us were thinking of Mike as a linebacker.
The Parsons pick got killed by a lot of people.
Oh, yeah. CeeDee Lamb, no, because it was unexpected.
Yeah.
The fall down. Vanderish, no. Taco, no. Man, Taco was the year after Zeke. It was that long ago.
Yeah.
Zeke, Byron Jones, no.
Byron Jones had I do remember Byron Jones wasn't like the unanimous one, but there were a lot of people who I think felt like that made sense at the end of the first round, potentially.
Well, it was still like, what, UConn? Well, he could be president because of a long jump?
Yeah.
It was still like, what, the UConn football program? Zach Martin, no, because of Johnny. Frederick, hell no. Could it have been Claiborne? It could have been Mo.
Maybe once they traded up, once we knew they traded up.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, the guy.
And then Tyron, Dez.
It's probably Dez. Everybody wanted Dez here. He was a local kid. Everybody thought he was a stud. They thought, okay. And that was one that they traded for. Like, they made the move back to get him. But
this is the most unanimous I've seen it.
People love Tet. And it's, I think it's because, I think there was a little bit of a rallying. It felt like when they took Taco Charlton, there was a little bit of a rallying around TJ Watt, but there were still some who weren't sure about how he projected as a pure edge rusher. So I don't think that one was even unanimous because there were some people who wanted like Kevin King, the corner from Washington. But yeah, Tet, I think right now everybody just feels like you clearly, your biggest blinking light right now, for me anyway, and I think for a lot of fans, it's receiver two. You don't have enough weapons right now. And wide receiver two is such a big need. If there was a realistic chance for Genty to get there, Genty feels a little bit like CD this year, where it's like, yeah, if he gets to us, we'd love him.
Yeah.
But he's not going to get to us. And it makes a bunch of sense.
Some text from the totals on the fan, text 877-881-1053. 469 says a lot of Cowboys fans wanted Claiborne. Some saying Bijan, who went to the Falcons. 817 said that. And then 817 also brought up Patrick Surtain. A lot of Cowboys wanted Patrick Surtain in that draft.
You know who everybody felt like rallied around when they ended up getting? They got CD, and so, but it felt like that year a lot of people rallied around, please Kalavon Chase on, the edge rusher from LSU. Please get Chase on there. That would be such a dream. And then he got down there and they didn't pick him.
I remember, Laquon Treadwell.
People like Treadwell.
That was a former employee favorite here. And then Sharif Floyd. I remember a lot of Sharif Floyd hype.
Yeah, Sharif Floyd. And that was 13. That was the Frederick draft, I think, was that one. But, yeah, there's a lot of rallying around Tet McMillan right now. I think if Tet McMillan's there, that's who they're picking. If he's there at 11, they'll pick McMillan. Or 12, then they'll pick McMillan. It's just a question of can he get down there. It felt like for a long time, early on in the draft process, McMillan was almost in every mock selected fourth to the Patriots. Everybody kept putting McMillan top five, slam dunk. And then we had talked about this dynamic that had come out that was really weird of him sort of sliding in all these mocks. And some people were, Kuiper was putting him like 25 and he was getting pushed way down the board. And it's like, what the hell's happening here? Why are people talking about him like this at this point? Is it fatigue? What could be happening? Now it feels like the tide is turning this week again and you're starting to see, all right, there may have been some people blowing smoke because now the question again seems to be, can Tet get there? That's Nick Harris. His dream scenario is Tet McMillan. And Nick had said that he doesn't told us during draft 101. He's like, Tet's the dream. I don't, I'm not confident Tet's getting there.
Oh.
And that's something that you have to examine now. So let's see if Tet McMillan gets down the board to you in this mock draft from ESPN. It's the top 10 picks, and then you've got San Francisco, then Dallas. But of the top 10 picks, Matt Miller had talked to just various scouts across the NFL for ESPN and had asked them, hey, Titans on the board, who do they pick? And then moved on to the next one and said, hey, this player's off the board. Cleveland, who do you think they pick? So basically just pulled people from around the league who work in personnel departments to get their sense of where teams might have guys. So the number one pick, the Titans, an AFC East area scout projects Cam Ward, quarterback, Miami. Everybody feels like they've settled on that. The question had been, would Tennessee deal the pick? It just feels like now they're going to take him is likely what they'll do. The number two pick, Cleveland Browns. Again, another one that's picked up a lot of steam in the last week and a half, 2 weeks. Travis Hunter, receiver slash cornerback from Colorado. They've talked about in Cleveland that they would play him at receiver to start. So
more and more people, I got to give Ryan Broaddus credit. Well, ultimately the games will decide. But Broaddus was the first one I really heard hammer that he thought he was a better receiver than corner. And now you're starting to hear a lot more of it.
Yeah, it's still raw at both. And I think he could sharpen himself to be really good at either. His ceiling as a route runner is really, really high. He's not a technician yet. Similarly, his ceiling as a lockdown corner is really, really high. He's not a technician yet. He wins on a lot of just his athletic ability. Third pick in the draft, the Giants. The projected pick from an AFC North area scout says Abdul Carter, edge rusher, Penn State, not Shador Sanders. The scout said, easy decision. Sure, in a perfect world, we'd wish this would align a little better with a more immediate and glaring need on the roster, but we'll take the blue chip talent and rest easier for it.
Are you more upset that the Giants get Hunter, Carter, or Shador?
I would be...
Choppy would say Shador just because he's a quarterback.
It's a good question. Probably, like, I think the most pro-ready game wrecker is probably Carter, and he might be third on the list for me in terms of concern. Like, I would probably say Hunter would be one, then Shador two. And not because I would take Shador as a better player, but it is just the factor of they have no quarterback right now. If they were to get Shador and it would click, that'd be trouble for the Cowboys.
Do you think Carter can be Micah? Close? You see the projection?
No. I understand the similarities, but it's like poor man's Micah to me. I don't think he's quite to that level. And apparently he's a bigger headache than Micah was at Penn State.
Oh.
Number four, the New England Patriots, an NFC South area scout says Will Campbell, offensive tackle from LSU. Number five pick, Jacksonville Jaguars, which you're starting to hear a lot of buzz about Genty going to the Jaguars at five. Dane Brugler had that in his mock last week. More people are starting to jump on that bandwagon. But an AFC North area scout says Mason Graham, defensive tackle from Michigan. The Raiders at pick six projected in this mock draft to take Ashton Genty, running back, Boise State. That from an NFC West national scout. And a situation there where I think if Jacksonville were to take Genty at five, at six, there's a good chance the Raiders take Mason Graham. So it'll probably just flip regardless of who gets taken there. Seven, the Jets, an AFC South area scout says Armon Membu, offensive tackle from Missouri. Carolina Panthers at eight take Jalen Walker, edge slash linebacker from Georgia, kind of a tweener. Team still trying to figure out what to do with him. He's basically Hassan Reddick size. He's like 6'1", 240. But his best tape might be off of the edge. Number nine, New Orleans Saints, which has been a popular landing spot for Shador Sanders in a lot of these mock drafts and maybe a Tet McMillan threat area. Projected pick from an AFC West scout says Shamar Stewart, edge from Texas A&M, who Stewart is... a freaky athlete, just still trying to put some things together there. But Shamar Stewart from A&M. And then 10, the Chicago Bears select Will Johnson, cornerback from Michigan, projected from an NFC South area scout. So that would leave Tet McMillan still on the board when the 49ers come up to pick. The 49ers are such a threat right now because they realistically could pick just about anything. Other than, I think, quarterback. I don't think they pick quarterback, no matter how much Puka Nacua apparently wants them to.
Oh, yeah.
Puka Nacua had told Julian Edelman that he doesn't think the 49ers can have their window stay open if they pay Brock Purdy $50 million.
Ha!
Which I love somebody being willing to just...
Yeah. We all say that in our profession.
Dude, that's bold. I mean, could you imagine the headlines if somebody with the Eagles just gave an interview and was like, yeah, I think if you pay Dak that next contract, y'all's window is closed.
Yes, like, well, that would blow up.
That would be massive. But Puka Nacua putting it out there, I think he's wrong. I think they're going to pay him. I think the 49ers are going to be glad they paid him because I think Purdy's good enough to be a franchise quarterback.
Oh, you think?
Yeah, I would have I'd have Purdy in the top 10.
Yeah, but the point is of the roster weakening after they do it. Like San Fran, I've thought of, I think, quarterback almost last after their roster and why they've been so good.
So, yeah, they definitely have a really strong roster, but I would say that I think you clearly saw the difference that Purdy made between other guys that they've cycled in there before. Like, it's a clear difference with him running the operation.
But, you know, Puka's point, and I agree, let's see what happens when you don't have Debo, Kittle, Ayuk, and McCaffrey, and they pay you that money.
Yeah.
And I agree with that.
Sure.
That goes for anyone who's not special.
Yeah, that's 100% something that is worth discussing and worth pointing out. Now, on that pick for the 49ers, they could trade out of there because they need picks. They've sacrificed a bunch of them, so they need picks. They could trade. Maybe somebody comes up to get Shador there. Maybe they take Tyler Warren if they say, hey, we got to get a tight end here because George Kittle's getting up there. I don't think they would take McMillan at 11. But at that point, the threat is, does somebody want McMillan and says Dallas is going to take him?
Right.
Because if San Francisco makes the pick, would not be Tet McMillan, I don't believe. Then at number 12, Tet McMillan in this scenario is there, the receiver from Arizona, and I think they take him. Like, I think that's
what's going to happen. He drops to 12. The Cowboys trade back for a little and infuriating all of the Metroplex.
I mean, it was, what was that? That was last year with Zach, where his center, Graham Barton, was there, got all the way down to the Dallas's pick, and then they traded away from it, and
yeah,
he just, he almost cried there in the draft room. But he, I mean, I think that what'll happen is if,
and you stepped in and filled all the airtime.
That's what it was.
Picked
not
up the slack.
It was day one. It was not day three yet. That's why I had to step out on day three. I exhausted all my words. I will say that I think Tet is the pick if he's there. I don't think they'd go up for him. I think they recognize they've got such little, missing that fourth rounder is so huge to them. I don't think they're willing to sacrifice picks unless maybe it's something next year to move up a little. But teams want capital now typically. So I don't think they'd move up for him. I think if he's not there, now they change their perspective a little bit and they start going, okay, we know we need a receiver, but do we potentially window dress our board a little bit and take Golden, who we may not have rated as the highest player here? Do we try to trade out? Well, we have to find somebody who wants to deal with us and wants to come up. And there's a lot of teams right now that feel like pick 10 through 40 is close enough to the same guy in terms of talent that I'm not willing to give up capital to go get it. And so if you can't find a dancing partner, that may be where you just have to stand in, make a pick, and it may or may not be Golden at that point.
All day NFL draft coverage on Thursday here on the Dallas Cowboys Radio Network. The rest of us will be at Pluckers. I'll be in Mesquite with Jake Rietma, so come on out and say what's up. He's our Rangers insider play-by-play man, Jared Sandler. Did the Rangers get cheated on second base? And was this a good or bad showing against the Dodgers in Arlington? Jared Sandler joins us next.